proposals around the National Public Transport Subsidy Policy. A quick backdrop, the initial discussion started around February and March, and we formalized an engagement on the 11th of May, where the document was officially put out in its first format to the industry wide. And then we did a presentation from Sabaha on behalf of the industry, which included our comments and inputs. Then further to that, ongoing engagement between the team and Sabaha facilitated, the industry met on the 21st and narrowed down, when I say narrowed down, it was a substantive list, itemized list on specific issues of the policy, raising concerns, agreements, and or comments. And we submitted that to the team. We got a response to that. And today's session is to now align and formalize a process regarding the policy and the processes associated with the policy going forward. And we look to, after getting all the interactions done, I would imagine the department giving us guidance as to what is the formal consultative process versus engagement and how we go about it going forward. So with that quick backdrop, we set aside 2 hours, so let's try our best to get everything done, but I'm sure it's an important and critical issue. Prof. Walters, are you good to go?
Yes, I am.
Do you need the screen? I'll stop sharing anyway. Prof, over to you.
I could just get you. Thank you very much.
Basil, sorry, just before Prof. Walters goes, the number of people who are not on mute and there's kind of feedback coming through. So I wonder if we can just attend to that.
Thanks, Rihanna. Yeah, that's one of the challenges in the digital space. No matter how much we tell people, how much we go through protocols, it is a real challenge. So everybody, I think you've got that loud and clear. Please attend to your mute button. And I learned a trick yesterday. If you do want to speak and you are on mute, if you hold your space bar down a couple of seconds, it unmutes you. It allows you to speak. And then when you release it, you remain on mute. So you don't have to keep toggling between it. So I won't charge you for that free advice. But please, yes, everybody, I think let's keep that mute button on. Darko, your hand up before Jackie starts.
Yes, I just wanted to refresh everybody that in your quick background refreshment, you didn't mention that we actually started engaging Sabaha and the bus industry in the early days of the policy development, which was in early 2019. And maybe you basically have not been around, I'm not sure, but it was definitely some engagements at that time before the actual real work started, if I can say like that. Yeah.
Absolutely correct, Darko. No, not a deliberate omission. I zeroed in from the process of 2021, but you are spot on and acknowledged the engagements that start from the onset, correctly recorded. So, and just for final from my point of view, the meeting's being recorded, so we can share that link and or the entire recording all parties past process to refresh on the actual discussion. Thank you, Prof. Over to you.
Thank you, Basil. Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, I think, Dr. you're correct that there was a consultation in 2019. Way back in 2019, there wasn't a formal workshop, I think, where you put some options on the table, amongst other, the user side subsidies and discussions around that. I can remember it very vividly, but that was the only one, I think, that we had on this proposed subsidy policy so far. So what's happened is that Sabaha had worked through this document in detail. There was also a workshop earlier on this year, I think it was in May, where some of the issues that we flagged were discussed and pointed out to the consulting team. There were many people in that meeting as well. But it was also based on the same document. We haven't seen a new document. This document that we are commenting on and engaging with you on this afternoon is a 2020 document, a June 2020 document. So we haven't seen anything new or any results of our interactions in 2019 or 20, you know, since May this year. So we don't know where it's going, but let's see, let's feel our way. So what I'm going to do is we've submitted a detailed document to the Department of Transport, Nasiba. I spoke to Nasiba yesterday about this. He acknowledged receiving it, and we also sent this detailed document to the consultants. This was about just more than a week ago, and we did receive some comments back from the consultants, and I must say we are very disappointed in the type of comments we did receive back. And we view it from the office point of view, so by our office, is that like, it's like a fob off, you know, that your comments are not worth it. And you know, we didn't consider all of them because there were many questions, at least 50 areas if we wanted some clarification on, and we had hardly any clarification on some of the thinking. So that's very, very disappointing and disheartening, considering that we are in the consultation process. Our view is also, if you look at the entire document, that it appears as if the consultants had a brief in forcing certain things through the subsidy policy, like the nationalization of the industry, user-side subsidies and so on, not considering all the options for subsidies. We would have thought that there would have been in this document some rational thinking in terms of pros and cons, intended, unintended consequences of different policies, but also some evidence that the proposals are actually working elsewhere in the world and that one can draw from there and maybe visit those areas and see what their experience is here. But we haven't seen any response as far as that's concerned. So that's just as a background. For this afternoon session, the document that we sent you consists of about 15 pages of comments from our side, and the table format linked to the different sections of the 2020 document that we commented on. But from my point of view, I'm only going to highlight 9 areas I think are really critical. Not to say that other areas that we request comments on, consideration of, are not important. It's only for this afternoon session that we think we should highlight the main areas. So, if you have the document in front of you, we've sent the document, by the way, also to our member operators, and they should be able to follow if you have the document in front of you. So the first overall comment that we have, and which comes from paragraph 5.1 of the document, is that we are concerned that we are currently have a subsidy policy in place, right, which is the contracting system. And then you also look at the rail, the deficit subsidy system in the rail side, and also the deficit subsidies in the municipal bus services. But mainly, if you look at the road-based modes of transport, we have the contracting system, which is a critical element of the subsidy system. We know what's happened to the system. It's not been operating. We haven't had basically no new contracts since 2002. And since then, we also had the DORA coming in, and the industry is at limbo. We can't invest in vehicles. We don't know how long the contracts will last. We've just heard 2 weeks ago that our Goa bus company's contract will lapse in 3 months' time. What's in its place? Where are we going with this thing? So what we are missing from this public transport subsidy policy proposals is a thorough analysis of what went wrong. Why did it go wrong? Why are we not progressing? And to go forward without addressing those issues, we feel we're wasting our time. There are critical issues, systemic issues, issues around local authorities, integrated transport plan developments, the capacity to develop that. And this proposed policy also has that as a foundation to go forward. None of that we see in this document. So the inadequate levels of funding, for instance, which is critical, and these proposals that's being put forward here, it will require much more funding, but where will that come from? At the moment, it's a huge issue to fund road-based public transport, bus services and so on through the contracting side. So if we can't see proposals around this and potential solutions or some discussion around that, how can we go forward? So the whole cost needs to be addressed. The failures of past policies, subsidy policies, need to be addressed to see whether those policies should be retained, amended, whatever the case may be, to go forward. So this is the first overall comment that we have, and we don't see that. And we do believe that part of the brief to the consultants was that they must look at different options, because people always say you only look at one option and you're not moving beyond that. But this is certainly an option throughout the world. This is a very important option that's been followed. In many instances, in most countries of the world, there's contracting of public transport services, but yet we don't see any fundamental analysis of that. That's paragraph 5.1. Then if you go to paragraph 6.11, the policy guidelines, the vision is stated as provide financial support to the impoverished citizens to enhance their mobility to attain basic economic, social, and education needs whilst ensuring economic and environmental sustainability of society. This is contrary to the white paper. I believe the white paper 1996 is still in place, where we're looking at mobility for all, not only impoverished citizens. Obviously, in South Africa, it must be a main focus to look at the impoverished people. And if you do look at the bus services in Vale, it's mostly impoverished people. But we are trying also to get people out of motor cars and trying to make a difference there in terms of accidents, congestion, pollution, and so on. And Gautrain is a good example. Gautrain, one of the big motivating factors for Gautrain's establishment was to get people out of their motor cars in Johannesburg and Pretoria into the Gautrain and to relieve the pressure on the N1 there. So, yeah, this policy now narrowly focused on impoverished citizens, and all the proposals going forward is based on this, on impoverished citizens. But we need to look at the environmental and other aspects as well, and that includes everybody, not only the impoverished citizens. So this is, for us, a big problem, you know, and that is contradictory to the white paper and our general opinions around the need for public transport in South Africa. The Gauteng Freeway Improvement Plan caused a lot of discussions, and people said, we don't want to use that freeway, but we want to use public transport. The car users want to use public transport, but there was none that was acceptable to them from a safety point of view, accessibility point of view, you know, affordability point of view, and so on. They were accepted as potential options to using the motor car on the freeway. And this shows that there's a need out there to look at public transport in general, not only to the impoverished in the country itself. Then the third comment is on paragraph 7.2. Where it states that there's an emerging trend of splitting asset operations in, I assume, yeah, it's bus services that's being talked about. But we don't see that trend. We see private sector companies providing services to state-owned authorities like municipalities and so on contract. This is what we see. And we don't see this trend of splitting assets and operations from each other in the world as a trend. And we would like to have the consultants show us where this trend has been. In the comments we received back, they mentioned Singapore. That's one example. But what about all the other countries? How many other countries in the world? What's been the trend there? We need to be convinced that this is the case and this is the way to go. In any case, if you look at the white paper of 1996, the emphasis in the white paper is on private sector provision but contracted to the state through contracts in the bus industry. And this was very clear. And this was there was no dispute about this direction that we were taking. Then the fourth comment is the table 8.1, where it says that benchmarks will be used to subsidize public transport. These benchmarks, in our view, are totally unattainable. Why set these benchmarks if you cannot achieve them in the next 10, 15, or 20 years? We need to have a relook at these, because this is going to harm any operator that wishes to participate in a subsidized system from participating in the system if they don't meet these criteria. For instance, labor costs as percentage of total operating costs. Currently in the bus industry, it's between 35 and 45% of total operating costs. The only way you can really lower that throughout the system is by outsourcing of labor in the workshops, cleaning services, security services, and so on. And we know that labor is totally dead set against that. There's a big push from labor to insource labor, not to outsource labor. So this is the one area. And you cannot compare a former industry that has scheduled services like the rail and bus industry to an informal service where the only labor component is basically the driver driving this vehicle. You can't compare the two to each other. The 50 gram CO2 per passenger kilometre is also unrealistic. The maximum trip length we know in the white paper 1996, these lengths were set. But we did not act on those. We did not achieve that. Even this day, to this day, urban development is further and further away from the places of work. And we have very little densification and infilling going on. So for the last 26 years, we've not been able to achieve this. Now we say this again. What are we having in place to achieve this? To achieve zero fatalities per 100,000 population in public transport is one of those unachievable objectives that you have here, or criteria that you have here to be subsidized. So there are quite a few of these, I think, that will be very problematic in trying to implement, and to leave this to the condition of subsidy is just not on. For instance, the other one in the same area, minimizing the cost of service to 10% of income will massively increase subsidies. We've had this for a long time. We've not been able to achieve that. Even the household travel surveys show us that. But yet we put this down again. Shouldn't we amend this target of 10% to something else? So once again, when setting benchmarks, it must be realistic, it must be attainable. One must be able to strive towards that and try and implement and meet them through green energy, if you look at CO2 emissions and so on. But we don't see movements of that. South Africa is so far behind, for instance, on green energy solutions and public transport. This is because an objective. Then paragraph 8.7, this is the section where it talks about user-side subsidy. It says, subsidy will comprise a user-targeted operational component and a capital subsidy amount. We asked the consultants to explain this, but it wasn't explained. And we don't know what this means. We did not hear this in our last session that we had with the consultants of 2019. There wasn't discussion about this, but there's no document around this, no reasoning, nothing we can read, nothing we can see to explain to us what this means. We requested examples of the effective implementation of user-based public transport subsidies internationally, so we can look at them. And big systems. We know that our user-side subsidies in very contained systems like old age homes and maybe creches and places like that. But when you look at a countrywide user-side subsidy system, it's a very, very big thing that we're talking about. So from a management point of view, the fact you may not be able to really direct public transport based on transport plans. The fact you won't be able, and we've seen that in deregulated systems, you won't be able to control competition on the road for passengers and rivalry between operators to get more and more passengers. And so on. And one can carry on like this. We don't know what it would cost the government. Was the costing done before this recommendation was made? For the government to have a full view of what the implications are of a user-side subsidy system. From many areas, I'm not going to list all of these that we listed for you, but we believe one of the major areas to consider is that user-side subsidies will lead to higher levels of competition to taxi operators, which lead to more violence in the industry, unless they are totally formalized and they can control this. And we don't believe South Africa has the ability to control this type of violence on a big scale throughout the country amongst operators. And the Cape Town example is a very good example of where operators are fighting each other for the passengers on specific routes. So we need to learn from these experiences, especially in South America, what happened there, why they formalized those industries into larger entities so that they could get rid of this rivalry, intramodal rivalry and intermodal rivalry to carry as many passengers as possible. The sixth area is around paragraph 8.7.2. Here it says, the document states the following. The subsidy will be limited to households that are considered poor. So it's limited to those households considered poor, only below the upper bound poverty line that is determined by the state at 1,183 rand per month and 2018. So probably a new limit there somewhere. And then persons from such households should not spend more than 10% per month on transport for work, education, basic health services. It's a very strong statement to make, but there's nothing to back this up. How much will it cost? How many people are involved? How much must you raise the subsidy on those routes and areas throughout the country to meet this 10% criterion that you've set here? So the questions arise from this that arise from this are, what is the subsidy cost per month per year, and how it will be determined for people earning various levels of income to meet this 10% target? What will it cost the fiscus? Do we know how many communities are involved? We don't even know how many taxis are in the country. Do we know how many communities are going to be involved as far as this is concerned? If a user size subsidy is introduced with this policy conditions, has the potential intended and unintended consequences been considered for the respective modes of transport? What's going to happen to bus services and rail services as far as this is concerned? How will you manage that? How will it affect modal sustainability, safety and security? How will unbridled competition amongst taxi operators and potentially bus operators as well be controlled in the endeavor to transport as many people as possible? What happens to other public transport objectives such as lessening road congestion, improving safety of operations? How are these objectives served by the intended policy? What happens to people earning more than the financial threshold that are using bus and rail services, including Gautrain? Do their indirect subsidies fall away? And users of long distances...
Sir, can I be recognized? Chairperson, can I be recognized?
Mona Lisa, will you stand by? I've sent you a note saying I note your hand. When Jackie's finished, we'll attend to you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm nearly finished. So, in the bus industry, users of long distances are highly subsidized. Do we now charge the full fares because they don't meet those criteria? What will the ramifications be? And so on. Then, a very important area, 8.7.3. Proposed policy proposes the following, that all the infrastructure, so as depots and so on, including non-motorized transport infrastructure, we need to understand what that means, and vehicles operating on the subsidized network will be owned by the state. Does this mean the taxis that are now going to receive subsidies, user size subsidies, and the buses will be nationalized? We haven't had an answer on this. So operators will also be required to compete for the right to operate in line with the service contract and improve transport planning to ensure non-discriminatory access to the infrastructure. Fare structures and operational features of the network will be set by the relevant municipality in line with the improved transport plan. So we are now moving from a mostly dominant private sector service provision in public transport, excepting rail, to something owned by the state. And the motivation for this is not clear. We feel this is a form of nationalization, where the state will provide the services, operations, infrastructure. So Sabola objects to this, and we don't believe this is the right thing to do. And it's also, if you look at the rail green paper, where the government wants to involve more private sector in this, not the government only being sole service provider. It's also against that overall principle that you involve the private sector to render many of these services. Then under 8, it says the following, 8.7.4. Subsidy will be limited to capital subsidy and subsidization of persons from poor households. High income households are considered subsidized through the provision of capital subsidy public transport. This is not understood and requires a further explanation, which we didn't get. What is a capital subsidy and how will it assist persons from non-targeted households? In the previous paragraph, it was stated that the state would own all the infrastructure and vehicles on the subsidized network. Why capital subsidy for users then maintain that the state owns all the assets? So we wouldn't get any answer on that. And then lastly, Mr. Chair, on paragraph 9.9 and 9.10 in the document, on what model is the view or opinion predicated that major public transport in South Africa necessitates state ownership? So it links to the previous point. It says, and I quote, this is an issue with transport system as public funding that is not publicly owned. Why is this a problem in public transport? The government compensates the operator for services rendered on behalf of the state, but not for some other businesses like construction companies, building roads, hospitals, schools, water systems, and so on, where they also contract to the state to do the service, but the state does not own them. Why is this a problem in public transport if we have contracts? So then it says, and I quote, the situation is particularly prevalent in South Africa where the privately owned service is continually funded by government but may not be economically viable but considered socially necessary. Once again, the arguments for the ownership of of public transport by the state, not by the private sector, does not wash, and we want to understand why this is the case and why this proposal is being made. Then the last quote of the paragraphs 9.9, 9.10 of the document, the nature of public transport in South Africa necessitates state ownership and a certain level of control. And then the outcome, and the government has shown repeatedly that it cannot own and operate services in an economic and sustainable manner. There are many examples in the bus industry where the government owns bus companies, provincially and local bus companies, local spheres of government, commuter rail like Prasa, as well as SAS Express and Mango. So we don't understand why the state thinks it can be different in owning commuter bus services. Why would it be different from these major entities like I've just mentioned at the local level of government? So we need answers on these, and we put these to the consultants, but we did not get the required responses that will put our minds at ease that this is the right way to go. And we really want the consultants to engage with us as far as our questions are concerned. There are more than 50 questions. I've only raised 9 areas at this point in time. We'd like to know more about this. We want more engagement. We want more of an understanding of where we're going to. And we want to be sure that you did not get a brief to motivate user side subsidies and then move away from something else and then not even discuss the contracting system that we have now in South Africa. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Jackie. Before I get to Rihanna to take us forward, Manalisa, please just introduce yourself, and you were looking to be recognized. I'm not sure on the chat when I reached out to you, you didn't tell me exactly what you were raising.
Can Manalisa? I then come in? Yes, Chair, can I come in?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair, so much for the opportunity. I'm actually Manalisa Skuka from the Eastern Cape. I am part of the small bus operators actually serving in the NEC. Firstly, as a group of organized small bus operators who by definition are PDIs, we find very strange that we are not accommodated in this agenda. That's our first registration. Secondly, we want to register the approach the department is taking as if we don't exist. I'm not sure really whether we should actually embark on antisocial activities like taxes to be recognized. That's our second registration. We want to participate fully as citizens of this country owning buses. Any process that excludes us will remain unjust. We are actually pleading for our accommodation in terms of the agenda, so that at an appropriate time we're able to make our presentation as it relates to subsidy of public transport sector. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Manalisa. I think that is positioned squarely at the doorstep of the department.
Can I follow there, Basil?
Yes, final.
No, Basil, before we go further, I think my colleague, I'm the Secretary General for Sandsburg. There is a management committee that is a delegation that is was delegated by Sandsburg. And we don't want to participate in a forum that we really don't know. Is it ourselves and Saboa or is the department? First thing, you are chairing the meeting, we are invited by Department of Transport. Secondly, there was no structured agenda. So we don't really want to waste time because this thing of treated by the way as Sandsburg. Professor Walters was now talking about the consultants, which we never met. We really don't know. It's like there seems to be a favor from the Department of Transport, whereas they know the existence of Sandsburg. So there is some presentation and input that we'd like to know. But before we go further, we want to know the status of this meeting. Are we invited by Saboa or are we invited by the Department of Transport? And why in such meeting the way we are not featured somewhere in order that we don't waste our time further. We will find a way in terms of making sure, like my colleague have been indicating to say, we are part of South Africans and an organized structure that is was developed by the Department of Transport. We are totally unhappy about the kind of draft, but before we can raise anything, can we know and be clarified about the status of this meeting? Thank you.
Colleagues, I will indulge you. I think you may have missed the start of the meeting where I articulated that the session is one of two sessions facilitated by SABOA with the National Department and two separate policy and proposal discussions. We had one this morning on the account-based ticketing. It has flowed through to this afternoon. I appreciate your concerns there, and you've tabled it, but I think you're channeling it in the wrong space. The invite has come from the department, so your concerns around involvement, access to the consultants, and or presenting your submissions, I think may unfold. I'm being premature, and maybe the consultant will talk us through when you get to have your levels of engagement. But we are pretty, I wouldn't say far down the line, colleagues. We've had a couple of engagements. And as you would understand from Darko's original correction of my posturing, the initial engagement started around 2019, flowed through to 2020 with SABOA. And so this is a SABOA-driven event today. You have not been invited by SABOA to this event. The department may have warranted or requested your presence. But I think for purposes of this meeting, your concerns and your challenges posed there should be placed with the department. And if you need assistance from SABOA, then offline, Mrs. Kudumo and Manalisa, I can chat to you about it. But I think let's not belabor the challenges you face in that relationship and positioning with the department at this meeting for lack of hindering the process. There is a portion coming later on, and again, you might have missed it. There was an agenda of structuring the time and structure of the session. It spoke to managing of the 2 hours, and the first segment is done, and we're moving to the point of presentation from the consultants on behalf of the department, and hopefully I've contextualized today's meeting. And the department indicated to me that they've invited you, so we did not block your access to the meeting on the indication from the department. I hope I've clarified that matter.
No, Basil, I think department are here. Yeah. We don't really want to waste your time. Before our participation, yes, we appreciate the extension. But the department knows there has been an assurance from the department, and we have a correspondence from the department where such information was not shared amongst us. Can they really clarify to say why now, yes, as much as we are appreciating the extension that is driven by SABOA, why are we treated by the way? Because there has never been any consultation between Sandsbok and SABOA. In order that we take decision whether are we proceeding with this meeting or we are not going to proceed. Because this has been a tendency that has been taking on for quite some time, and about us without us. So Basil, with due respect, can you give the department to respond why Sandsbok has not been part of the process? And even today, you initiated a very good process, and they extended the invitation as the impression was that is a session of the department, because we don't want to waste your time in terms of our issues that are relating directly to the department. And I think they are the person that are best positioned to can respond to our concern. That's what we want to know, Basil.
Mr. Kudumo and Mr. Manamela, I think this is going to take a turn that is not necessarily warranted in this platform. Given that there are many stakeholders that have given up time, including Sandsbok, and by the looks of it, and the Eastern Cape structure, can I take advice from you, Mr. Manamela, on how you want to deal with this? My preference is that this be dealt with offline with the entities for purposes of not becoming the dominant theme of this session.
Thanks, Basil, and afternoon, colleagues. And I think there might have been a misunderstanding, because our engagement with yourself, Basil, was from the point of view that it should be taken as a joint submission, but I accept that we might have missed a step. We will take it offline with Sandsbok. We will arrange a special session with them to deal with their concerns without delaying this process. We note their concerns and then we'll immediately today address it with them. If we have to do a special session with them, we will do that.
Thanks, and noted, Lucy. But I think, giving the entity access to the consultants and not creating a perception of exclusion or unwarranted bias will assist. There's no harm in further down the line aligning once they've had the full session and consultations. Mrs. Kodumo and Manalisa, I'm going to leave it there. You have had your commitment from Mr. Manamela to reach out and engage you going forward. And by all means, thereafter, maybe once you've had your initial engagements and you want to liaise with Sabo, we'll make ourselves available. Mr. Dako, I see another hand. It's the last hand I'm going to take, Olivia, because this is, and I'm hoping that it's not the same topic, but something different. Madam?
Thank you, Basil. Good afternoon, colleagues. I think I'm also reiterating on the very same issue. Having had my colleagues from Sandsbok and the response from department, and we really appreciate this initiative from Saboa. But, you know, I really want also to acknowledge the response from the department by Ntate Manamela, because honestly, you cannot put Saboa and Sandsbok under the same umbrella. We are far apart. The issue of the policy, which is the main issue of today, is not going to be addressed in the same interest by the two association and council. Departments knows very well the struggle and the challenges that the small bus operators are having. And to tell the honest truth, I don't think it's going to be beneficial for Sandsbok to participate on this platform with Saboa addressing issues, whereas we are not, you know, on the same ground, given the challenges and the issues. I think maybe what we need now is just a commitment from the department that they will arrange a similar session for us, you know, sooner, so that we can also address the issues that we have pertaining to the policy. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam. I think that's been acknowledged by Lesiba. He committed to post process and with haste getting back to you with a commitment on scheduling your session and interactions. But noted and agreed. And we will align down the line as to how we can or cannot harmonize our responses. So having said that, I think you may lower your hands. Dako, Madam Musaji, you finally get to take the stage, the virtual stage. Over to you. I think you do have a share screen facility.
Thanks, Basil. Thanks to Prof. Walters and also the colleagues from the bus industry, whether those be small bus operators who have registered some concerns now, which the department has agreed to take up, or established bus operators. I think on behalf of the Future of Transport Consulting team, we want to say thank you for the opportunities that you have created for engagement on this draft discussion document. But I just want to kick off, and Darko, if you can please screen share for me, Prof. Walters, to say that I'm quite concerned by your sense that because the team has not necessarily agreed with some of the departure points of the industry, that means we haven't listened to what you've said. And I think I'm hoping that today's engagement can actually open up so that we can have robust engagement about some of these issues. And I was quite struck, Prof. Walters, that perhaps the biggest point of departure is fundamentally different. Your notion that by virtue of a contract system, a subsidy policy is in place, and a drafting team that understand that in fact, the Department of Transport has been put under immense pressure by National Treasury to come up with a clear policy that actually provides the rationale for why and how we pay subsidy. And it does sound like we might not be on the same departure platforms, which might be why so many of the other things feel like they don't align, or you might feel unheard. But either way, I want to just very quickly, Basil, with your permission, quickly just remind colleagues who have been in other engagements with us some of the key premises that the drafting team have used in getting to this draft discussion document for subsidy policy. So, Darko, we can move. So I think the issue is very much that we have used a number of documents. Firstly, that we have to be guided by the constitution of this country, and that we've used the constitution, the National Development Plan, and the South African Automotive Industry Master Plan, as well as Prof. Walters, the white paper on transport policy adopted in February of this year, as well as the NLTA. So, you know, we have chosen and we are guided by those documents. And I think specifically from the white paper on transport policy, which gives a clear indication that a subsidy guideline should be developed, which establishes the objectives of such a policy. So as I said earlier, the premise that we currently, by virtue of having a contracting regime, have a policy, is our sense that that's exactly what this piece of work is trying to do. And as you've indicated, should look at appropriate models of its implementation and a costing methodology. That the basic principles of the subsidy guideline should be that it is user-targeted, equitable and sustainable, both in the medium to longer term, that transport authorities or their equivalent coordinated and accountable structures concerned with the current funding for such services are both inadequate and variable and will continue their efforts to secure adequate and consistent funding. So I think, Prof, we're all on the same page that in fact, right now, and going forward, the money that's being allocated to subsidy is inconsistent with the important role that public transport plays socially, economically, and environmentally. And that is factored into a lot of what is in our document. And yes, we would have to collectively then apply our minds around the effective funding mechanisms to support implementation of transport plans and policies. And it's not just about the operating side of transport, but also noting that there are massive infrastructure gaps in the transport system as well. And I mean, I think colleagues who come from more rural areas will definitely testify to that. Darko, we can keep moving. The National Development Plan obviously reminds us that public infrastructure investment should be at 10% of GDP and should be financed through tariffs, PPPs, taxes and loans, focused on transport, energy and water. And then I think importantly, thinking about the South African Automotive Industry Master Plan and what role public transport and road-based public transport in particular can play to boost growth and create jobs in relation to annual production of vehicles, particularly raising the proportion of auto components made locally in relation to moving those percentages up to 60%. And I think we're all noting what's happening specifically with the private vehicle industry and the knock that that's taking, and how do we move public transport into the automotive industry master plan decisively. Darko, we can keep going. further, the document also says that subsidy approval and provision must be based on the development and approval of sound transport plans. So I think the fact that the Constitution makes the provision for transport plans to be developed primarily at municipal level or where there are municipalities that don't have capacity by the lowest competent sphere of government, the notion of having subsidy without transport plans is not something that can be entertained in the draft discussion document, because certainly this is where we're moving to. I think many of the comments that Saboa had made was around whether the requisite capacity is there. And of course, today, Prof, you've raised a whole number of issues on the benchmarks being in your opinion or in the opinion of Saboa, unrealistic. But I think also the notion of the current subsidy or the current contracts being mode-based, and the fact that everyone's responding to the proposals that are being made from a mode-based perspective, as opposed to the need for an effective mix of transport modes in a planning area, and the transformation of the prevailing operational approach, regardless of the modal mix. So I think that notion of how do we, as a country, move away from, so when we, it's interesting that in Saboa's submissions, the assumption is, well, you favored minibus taxi, and then we go to Sentaco and they're like, you're trying to keep the status quo for bus and rail. But when do we get as a country to a point where we talk about an effective mix of transport modes, as opposed to this consistently conflictual relationship, which comes at high cost to commuters? And that the reality for now is that the minibus taxi does remain the preferred mode on many routes and corridors within planning areas, but it is not the most efficient mode, particularly in urban areas. And I think our document makes reference to the fact that South African households are spending disproportionately large amounts of household income on low capacity modes, which doesn't make for a sustainable transport system. Also that the user-based subsidy, and I think the events of the last couple of months and post during the COVID period have really indicated and highlighted the levels of inequality that is a reality that no matter which sector we're in society, we need to be thinking about. And then as you've indicated, the proposal around a capital-based subsidy, which would provide for acceptable expenditure levels to other population groups. And it is estimated that approximately 25% of the prevailing operating costs in the bus industry is generated by capital expenditure. So as we move then, Darko. To remind colleagues, I mean, we have presented this before, but I just want to indicate that not all of the proposals in the draft discussion document are like, if this thing gets approved tomorrow, everything happens the next day. It is incremental in its approach, and some of the short-term priorities, and we would think that Saboa would be particularly interested in point three of these implementation priorities, which gets us out, Prof. Walters, of the limbo that you've talked about, that we move towards the preparation of a competitive procurement process for prevailing bus contracts based on interim rationalization, but that we actually create certainty in the system and ensure stabilization of the service and improvement of the service, but also then some of the other kind of short to medium term priorities is really evaluating additional capital subsidy through an existing mechanism, because I think we are saying that from the minibus taxi perspective, they're saying, well, we've been in these conversations since 1996. And the notion around formalization is something that is not going to happen overnight. And I think we've seen that with the rollout of a number of BRT systems. I think you've just had, Basil, as you've indicated, a session earlier this morning, but definitely the issues around appropriate technology solutions and the introduction of AFC systems, particularly for minibus taxi, is something that we think is important in the short term. And then subsidized connectivity of road-based services to rail services, and then locating state-subsidized housing programs in the vicinity of rail stations. So we can't continue, Prof. Walters, you've indicated that 26 years into democracy, in some ways, we've cemented apartheid spatial planning even further, and we can't continue on this trajectory as a country. It is somewhat unsustainable. So with that, I'm going to hand over now to my colleagues for some more detailed responses to some of the issues. I know that very specific issues have been raised by Saboa. We have categorized some of the broad categories of issues that you've raised, but I also want to allow other members of the team to really give you